I'm from northeastern British Columbia, Treaty 8 country. My land is, you know, where the mountains meet the plains. It's a beautiful country.
What's happening to us is a good example of what's happening globally. What I hope to learn from the Maori is how their people have used the law and blended it with their own law.
So I see this as the second wave of colonization for us. But this time it's colonization by capital. And capital doesn't have borders.
Almost every house, at least every other house, has probably had someone with cancer or someone in their family with major birth defects.
I don't care what we get out of it. I don't want that on our land.
It looks like flaring in the night sky all over your territory. It looks like big trucks with big burly men. A highly profitable boom and bust type economy has intrinsic difficulties, especially when sitting on top of 100 years of not so healthy cultural interactions, alcoholism, sexual abuse, physical abuse, endemic violence, both in the community around us and within our own family.
Children have a predisposition and amplify suffering as a result of exposure to toxins.
As you know from my face, I think I'm one of the few people in Canada that can say I've had my lips sewn together.
You have just heard clips from the film Fractured Land. It comes from Native leader Caleb Benn from the Athabascan Chipewyan First Nation in the far northeastern corner of Canada's province of British Columbia. Caleb is articling as a law student, but now seeing the complete failure of the law and the Canadian government to protect his land, he's wondering if becoming a lawyer was a mistake. Many of his people are prepared to break the law to stop the Northern Gateway Pipeline, another big gas pipeline up there, and the desecration of their land by the world's largest fracking operation. For the Aboriginal people, fracking is just the latest invasion. Their lands were grabbed for fur, gold, and logging. Their children were taken away to be trained as little white people in residential schools. Their language was forbidden. Abuse was commonplace. And now their sacred forests are being industrialized. I recorded Caleb Benn speaking in Burnaby, Canada on October 25, 2012 at an anti-pipeline presentation with 350org founder Bill McKibben and Council of Canadians founder Maude Barlow plus First Nations speaker Reuben George. Here is Caleb Benn.
I'm from about 2,000 kilometers that way. We have the dubious distinction of being the site of the world's largest frack last year. And we produce a third of the power in these lights. We produce a sizable portion of the coal that comes out of the port at Roberts Bank. We produce a lot of revenue for this province. And I would bet not many of you guys have been up there. I would bet that not many of you guys have traveled that part of our province. But the province and the piece of land that I come from, that my family's come from, has given a great deal to this collective we call British Columbia. And I don't think that a lot of people really appreciate that until you go up, until you see the size of what it is that I'm engaged in, the size of what it is that my family has fought for, and the size of the things that we fight for. Yeah, I hope that you can understand that my world is a little bit different, far away from this world where I've gone to school, because there's no law schools up there. So this is a series of slides as of 2005, just showing my territories. My father's nation, the Etchodene, are the nation up top, little red dot. My mother's nation, the Dunezo and the Cree, are the little nation down on the kind of the bottom right here. So this is a series of slides depicting aspects of the oil and gas industry in my territory. These are petroleum development roads. This doesn't include Forest Service roads. This doesn't include anything major. This is just stuff built to access petroleum. I think we went through facilities and well sites there. The territory I'm from has massive oil and gas development, both conventional and unconventional. These are seismic lines, and of course you need seismic to identify the subsurface structures and figure out what exactly the deal is. To put your wells appropriately, particularly for unconventional gas. Unconventional gas, you need to have 3D seismic, to have very detailed maps. This is one vision of my territory, you know, and it's not really to scale in some ways, but it depicts, I think, the intensity and the scope of the territory I'm in. This is pre-like high-volume slick-water hydraulic fracturing. This is pre-horizontal drilling. This is my territory before the Barnett Shale technology got perfected and Halliburton and Schlumberger figured out how to do this stuff. This is just a historical trajectory of wells drilled in my territory. And you kind of see the ramp up and the consistent pattern we see with unconventional resource development and non-renewables. And that's been something that my family, both my grandfathers were chiefs, as was my mother. And my dad was deeply involved in Treaty 8 Tribal Association and the constitutional debates. And so we've lived with this pattern. Like, for our whole lives, and that's come to typify my existence and one of the reasons I went to law school. This is a map of my father's territory, the Echidna territory, up in the top corner there. And you'll see kind of some, the blue bits are 3D seismic programs. They'd be big enough to cover Burnaby, probably. They're very large. They cut 3-meter swaths through the bush, put dynamite down these little holes, detonate them, have hydrophones that pick up the sounds and then process it down and create very detailed maps. But this is what it looked like as development came. Next slide, please. And then this is development this last year and a half ago. And this is what comes. This is the nature of unconventional energy. This is, in this context, this is the nature of Horn River development, Horn River natural gas. But you see this process and these dynamics all over. There's a couple interesting points about the slide above me. One, you can see kind of where the pipeline infrastructure then facilitates the well site extractions. The same with the mining. You need the pipelines, as Maud said so eloquently. It means they're the veins, they're the arteries of these developments. And so we understood very early and very in a very profound way the importance of those pieces of infrastructure and how they fed together. The point I want to end in is that the gas that comes from my territory goes over the tar sands and goes to market. The associated products, so the sulfur and the condensate's what's used to dilute the bitumen that comes out of the tar sands. So when we talk about unconventional resource development, the world's most energy-intensive gas comes out of my territory and goes over to the Athabasca chip, and it takes out the world's most energy-intensive oil. And, you know, I don't want to end on a negative note. I turned 31 yesterday, and I want to be positive as I enter this new phase of my life. But, but that's a tough one to swallow because Maud mentioned treaty rights, and that's accurate, but there's also treaty responsibilities. And I think you should recognize that you're treaty members too. You know, my people agreed by Treaty 8 in 1899 to share our territory with you, but that made both of us in a relationship. And the relationship I have to my land and my people compels me to question when things come out of my land and go to other people's land and destroy theirs. And the CO2 that comes out of these energy developments has a consequence globally. And that, for me, is the more appropriate way to construct these dialogues and understand that our responsibility as a collective is to engage on these issues. I mean, whether or not you share my perspective, which is why I acknowledged industry and government, you know, at least we can dialogue on that. And so I'll end with this. You know, in my territory right now, this week, we're fighting large-scale water licenses. The first of their kind, they're built specifically for fracturing, and they're built to facilitate certain fields that we feel should be developed. And we have exhausted every legal remedy we can. We've exhausted negotiations. We've had bad faith negotiations on the part of the province consistently. The treaty hasn't been implemented appropriately in 111 years. And it's at a point where I regret going into a profession where I'm compelled to follow the law. And that's really hard for me, my family, and my people. So I'd ask you guys, if you don't agree with my politics and my perspective and my vision of what this stuff actually is, at least bear witness to what's happening up there. If you can't stand with me, bear witness to what's happening. Because what's happening here and whether or not we solve these questions of resource extraction and equitability in these two kind of fighting cultures, this is a world issue. You know, it happens on gas, it happens on oil, it happens on water. And in my territory, they came for the furs, they came for the gold, they came for the forest, they came for the coal, they came for the wind, they came for the children. My father went to residential school. They came for the gas. They came to suck the lifeblood of Mother Earth. Then they came for the water. And they used the water to crack the land even further. And with respect, I can't be a part of that. And I hope you can't either. But if you can, at least bear witness to what happens. Because this is our collective. This is our like vision of our culture standing together and creating something called Canada, British Columbia, and people in general. So with that, I'll end again acknowledging all of you for coming and giving me a moment to speak. Cheers.
Find more on Caleb Benn's film Fractured Land at fracturedland.com. In my blog at ecoshock.info, I've got links to a Vimeo clip from the film featuring Josh Fox, director of Gasland, Naomi Klein, author and syndicated journalist, Thomas Mulcair, the leader of the NDP, Canada's official opposition party, and more. Fracking is right up there with the tar sands. It's a dirty technology that poisons the land while emitting large amounts of greenhouse gases, especially methane. For everybody concerned about fracking, Canada is a big part of the picture. And you can win. Here is what happened in one of Canada's biggest provinces, Quebec.
The industry had hired some of the best-known Quebec figures. I mean, the former head of Hydro-Quebec was there shilling for the gas companies in front of the cameras. One of his main arguments was, mais le Québec est en train de prendre du retard. Quebec is falling behind. And the average Quebecer said, tell it to somebody else. We see what this is causing. These wells are leaking. This is going to ruin the groundwater. My family's been on this farm for centuries. Get out. And that's what happened. The Quebec public stood up and threw them out, and they haven't come back.